So here's what 78% of professional bond investors told analysts at Goldman Sachs last Thursday. Amazon just got away with highway robbery. They watched the company price $50 billion in debt at rates that made no sense. 4.125% for 10-year money when comparable tech paper was trading 50 basis points higher. And yet, they bought it anyway, all of it, in 6 hours. Why would sophisticated money managers knowingly overpay for Amazon bonds? Because they had to. Because in the current market, you take what Jeff Bezos gives you, or you explain to your LPs why you're sitting in cash while everyone else is making money. But here's the thing nobody's talking about. This wasn't just Amazon flexing its balance sheet muscle. This was a $65 billion week that just rewrote the rules for how corporate America finances itself in a rising rate environment. The question isn't whether Amazon got a sweetheart deal. The question is what happens when every other tech giant looks at this pricing and decides they want in too. Welcome back to Edge Capital Insights. I'm Sloan. Today, we're going deep on Amazon's record-breaking $50 billion bond sale and the broader implications of what may be the most consequential week in corporate credit markets since the pandemic. This isn't just about one company raising money. This is about a fundamental shift in how investors think about risk, how corporations think about leverage, and how the Federal Reserve's policy decisions are creating unintended consequences in debt markets. Let's start with the landscape before this happened. 3 weeks ago, corporate America was facing a credit crunch that nobody wanted to admit was happening. The Fed had been telegraphing rate hikes since January, and investment-grade spreads had widened to levels we hadn't seen since early 2024. Companies were pulling planned issuances left and right. The IPO market was essentially frozen. Private equity firms were extending fund lives rather than executing exits because debt financing for buyouts had become prohibitively expensive. Into this environment walked Amazon with an announcement that made credit traders do double takes. $50 billion, not $5 billion, not $15 billion. $50 billion of senior unsecured notes across multiple tranches with maturities stretching from 2034 to 2044. The largest corporate bond deal in history, eclipsing even the mega deals we saw during the pandemic when the Fed was essentially backstopping corporate credit markets. The numbers were staggering from the start. Lead managers J.P. Morgan, Goldman Sachs, and Morgan Stanley began marketing the deal on Monday morning with initial price guidance that seemed almost aggressive. 4.3% for the 10-year tranche, 4.75% for the 30-year. These were rates that assumed investor demand would be extraordinary, not just strong. And the demand was extraordinary. By Tuesday afternoon, the order book had grown to over 130 billion dollars. That's not a typo. More than 2.5 times oversubscribed before the pricing was even finalized. Money managers were calling in favors, threatening to pull business from other deals, doing everything short of offering bribes to secure allocations. When the final pricing came through on Wednesday morning, it was even more aggressive than the initial guidance. 4.125% for the 10-year paper, 4.375% for the 30-year bonds. Amazon had successfully pushed rates down by 25 basis points during the marketing process. In a rising rate environment, that simply doesn't happen unless something extraordinary is occurring. The composition of the buyer base tells the real story. Traditionally, corporate bond deals see about 60% institutional participation, 40% from asset managers and insurance companies. This deal flipped those ratios. Asset managers took down nearly 70% of the issuance, with firms like BlackRock, Vanguard, and Fidelity accounting for massive chunks. Insurance companies, typically the anchor investors for long-dated paper, were pushed to the sidelines. But here's where it gets interesting. The geographic distribution was heavily skewed toward U.S. buyers, 85% domestic, 15% international. That's unusual for a deal of this size. Typically, mega deals require significant European and Asian participation to clear the market. The fact that U.S. investors absorbed nearly all of this paper suggests something profound about domestic appetite for high-quality tech credit. The ripple effects were immediate. Within 24 hours of Amazon's pricing, six other companies announced plans for major bond deals. Microsoft started preparing a $20 billion issuance. Google's parent company, Alphabet, began testing market conditions for $15 billion in notes. Even Apple, which famously uses debt primarily for tax optimization rather than operational funding, signaled interest in tapping the market. By Friday, total corporate bond issuance for the week had reached $65.2 billion. That's a 38% increase year over year, and the largest weekly flow since September 2022, when corporations were rushing to lock in financing before the Fed's aggressive tightening cycle really took hold. The average coupon across all new issues that week fell 15 basis points to 3.9%, despite the Fed having raised rates twice since the beginning of the year. Credit spreads on BBB-rated tech issuances actually widened 12 basis points after Amazon's sale, suggesting that the market was beginning to question whether other issuers deserved the same preferential treatment. Now let's talk about what the bulls are saying, because the bull case for this deal is actually quite compelling when you strip away the hyperbole and focus on the fundamentals. First, Amazon's balance sheet really is in remarkable shape. The company ended last quarter with over $60 billion in cash and short-term investments, generating free cash flow of nearly $40 billion annually. Their debt-to-equity ratio sits at just 0.28, well below the industry average of 0.45 for large-cap tech companies. When you can service $50 billion in additional debt with less than 15% of your annual cash generation, the leverage math works pretty cleanly. Second, the timing made strategic sense. Amazon had been planning major capital expenditures for their cloud infrastructure business, AWS, which continues to grow at 25% year over year, despite its massive scale. The company estimates they'll need over $100 billion in data center investments over the next 5 years to maintain their competitive position against Microsoft Azure and Google. Cloud. Rather than funding this through cash flow and potentially constraining other investments, they've essentially locked in funding costs at levels that may look very attractive in retrospect. The logistics expansion story is equally compelling. Amazon's fulfillment network still has significant white space, particularly in international markets and in last-mile delivery capabilities. The company has been testing autonomous delivery systems, drone programs, and same-day delivery networks that require substantial upfront capital investment. With e-commerce penetration still growing globally, there's a legitimate argument that Amazon is investing ahead of a secular growth curve that could last for decades. From a capital structure perspective, the deal actually improved Amazon's financial flexibility rather than constraining it. By issuing long-dated, fixed-rate debt at historically attractive levels, they've created a natural hedge against inflation and reduced their exposure to short-term rate volatility. The average maturity of the new debt is 12 years, meaning Amazon won't face significant refinancing pressure until well into the next decade. The market's reception suggests that institutional investors view Amazon as essentially a risk-free proxy for U.S. technology growth. The fact that their 10-year bonds priced through comparable treasury securities, meaning Amazon's borrowing costs, were actually lower than the U.S. government's, indicates that sophisticated money managers see the company's credit profile as superior to sovereign risk. That's an extraordinary vote of confidence. There's also a macro argument that this deal represents efficient capital allocation at the market level. Rather than sitting in low-yielding money market funds or treasury securities, institutional investors were able to capture higher yields while backing productive business investment. Amazon isn't using this money for financial engineering or shareholder returns. It's funding real economic expansion that should generate jobs, innovation, and tax revenue. The international demand component is particularly telling. European and Asian investors, who have been largely absent from U.S. corporate credit markets due to currency hedging costs and regulatory constraints, made exceptions to participate in this deal. That suggests global recognition of Amazon's unique market position and growth prospects. Here's the historical perspective that supports the bull case. During previous market cycles, companies that accessed cheap capital during volatility windows often outperformed significantly over subsequent years. IBM's massive bond deals in the 1980s funded their transition from hardware to services. Microsoft's debt issuances in the early 2000s supported their cloud computing investments that now dominate their revenue mix. Amazon may be following a similar playbook, using temporarily attractive financing conditions to fund the next phase of their business evolution. The credit quality argument is hard to dispute. Amazon operates in multiple business lines with diversified revenue streams. AWS alone could probably support investment grade ratings as a standalone entity. The retail business, while lower margin, generates enormous cash volumes and has demonstrated remarkable resilience through economic cycles. Even their newer ventures, like advertising and logistics services, are reaching scales that contribute meaningfully to overall profitability. But here's where the bull case gets really interesting. Some credit analysts argue that Amazon's bond pricing reflects a fundamental mispricing of technology risk by traditional credit rating agencies. Moody's and S&P still rate Amazon as A-, the same category as utility companies and industrial manufacturers with completely different risk profiles. If rating agencies eventually recognize that dominant technology platforms deserve premium credit treatment, similar to how they rate monopolistic utilities, Amazon's bonds could appreciate significantly as spreads compress. The demand dynamics tell a story about institutional portfolio construction that goes beyond Amazon specifically. With yields on high-grade corporate bonds finally reaching levels that make them competitive with equity dividend yields, fixed income managers are rotating back into credit after years of being starved for yield. Amazon's deal may have been the catalyst for a broader reallocation of institutional capital from cash and treasuries into investment-grade corporate bonds. But let's be honest about what they're not telling you, because the bear case for this deal and for the broader trend it represents is deeply concerning if you think through the second and third order effects. Start with Amazon's debt load in absolute terms. $50 billion in new borrowing brings their total debt outstanding to over $120 billion. That's not just a big number. It's a big number that represents a fundamental change in how Amazon operates as a business. For most of their corporate history, Amazon was essentially debt-free, funding growth through cash flow and equity raises. This shift toward leverage represents a maturation that may not be entirely positive. The timing is particularly troubling when you consider the Federal Reserve's position. Chair Powell has been remarkably consistent about the Fed's intention to keep raising rates until inflation expectations are anchored below 2%. Core inflation is still running above 3% annually, and labor markets remain tight despite some recent softening. If the Fed follows through on their projected rate path, Amazon will be servicing this debt in an environment where their borrowing costs are rising while their business fundamentals may be deteriorating. Here's the math that should worry you. Amazon's interest expense is about to increase by roughly $2 billion annually from this deal alone. That's $2 billion in fixed costs that have to be paid regardless of how their business performs. In a recession scenario, which becomes more likely as the Fed continues tightening, that interest burden could represent the difference between profitability and losses in some business segments. The broader tech sector context makes this even more concerning. Amazon isn't issuing debt in isolation. Microsoft has over $100 billion in debt outstanding. Apple carries nearly $120 billion despite their massive cash pile. Google has been increasing leverage steadily over the past 3 years. Collectively, the big tech companies now carry over $400 billion in debt, representing a systemic risk to the sector that didn't exist 5 years ago. But here's the really disturbing part. 78% of the professional investors who participated in Amazon's bond sale told analysts they believed the deal was overpriced relative to comparable credits. They bought it anyway. That's not rational price discovery. That's momentum investing in credit markets, which historically ends very badly. The historical analog here isn't the tech success stories from previous decades. It's the leverage cycle that led to the 2008 financial crisis. Not because Amazon is anything like Lehman Brothers, but because the market dynamics are eerily similar. Institutional investors chasing yield, borrowers taking advantage of artificially low rates, and everyone assuming that current conditions will persist indefinitely. Corporate credit spreads have been compressed to levels that make no sense given the underlying economic uncertainty. BBB-rated corporate bonds, the lowest investment-grade tier, are trading at spreads barely above A-rated paper. That suggests investors aren't being properly compensated for credit risk, which means they're either going to be disappointed by returns or surprised by defaults. The refinancing risk is enormous and underappreciated. Amazon's new bonds don't mature for 10 to 20 years, but they're entering a market where corporate refinancing requirements are about to explode. Over the next 3 years, U.S. corporations need to refinance nearly $800 billion in debt that was issued during the pandemic at artificially low rates. If credit conditions tighten significantly, Amazon may find themselves competing with hundreds of other issuers for limited. There's also a fundamental question about whether Amazon's business model can support this level of leverage during an economic downturn. AWS growth is already slowing as corporate customers optimize their cloud spending. Retail margins are under pressure from inflation and competition. The advertising business, while growing, is sensitive to broader marketing budget cuts that typically accompany recessions. Adding fixed interest costs to a business mix that's showing signs of maturation seems like questionable timing. The international exposure creates additional complexity. Amazon generates significant revenue in currencies other than dollars, but their debt is predominantly dollar denominated. If the dollar continues strengthening, which often happens during Fed tightening cycles, Amazon's international earnings will be worth less in dollar terms, while their debt service requirements remain fixed. That's a natural hedge in reverse. Here's what really should keep credit investors awake at night. Amazon's deal was so successful that it's encouraging other companies to follow suit. If Microsoft, Google, Apple, and others all tap the debt markets over the next 6 months, the supply of new corporate bonds could overwhelm demand and cause spreads to widen dramatically. Early issuers like Amazon benefit from scarcity value, but latecomers to the party often face much worse conditions. The market structure issues are profound. Corporate bond markets are notoriously illiquid during stress periods, and the concentration of ownership among a small number of large asset managers creates systemic risks. If BlackRock, Vanguard, and Fidelity, who collectively own huge portions of Amazon's new bonds, need to sell simultaneously, there may not be natural buyers at current price levels. So what does this actually mean for different stakeholders, and what should you do with this information? For retail investors, the implications depend entirely on how you're exposed to these markets. If you own Amazon stock, you need to understand that the company just took on significant leverage that will constrain their financial flexibility going forward. That $2 billion in annual interest expense represents a permanent reduction in free cash flow available for reinvestment, acquisitions, or shareholder returns. In a rising rate environment, that constraint becomes more binding over time. But there's a more subtle effect on Amazon's equity valuation. The company has historically traded at premium multiples, partly because of their pristine balance sheet and unlimited financial flexibility. Adding $120 billion in debt changes that equation fundamentally. Equity investors should expect Amazon's valuation multiples to compress toward levels more typical of leveraged technology companies, which could mean 10 to 15% downside, even if business fundamentals remain stable. For bond investors, the risk-return calculation is complex. Amazon's credit quality remains excellent, and their new bonds offer decent yield in a market where high-quality options are limited. But you're buying at prices that assume everything goes right for the next decade. Corporate bond markets are cyclical, and current conditions represent peak demand rather than normalized conditions. If you're buying Amazon bonds, you should plan to hold them to maturity rather than trading them, because liquidity during stress periods will be poor. The institutional implications are broader and more concerning. Pension funds and insurance companies that participated in this deal are making 30-year liability matches based on current interest rate assumptions. If rates continue rising, the mark-to-market losses on these positions could be substantial. More importantly, they're concentrating risk in a small number of megatech issuers at precisely the moment when diversification would be more valuable. For corporations watching Amazon's success, the message is clear but dangerous. The window for cheap debt financing is open now, but it won't stay open forever. We should expect a wave of debt issuance over the next 6 months as CFOs try to lock in attractive rates before conditions deteriorate. That supply surge could overwhelm demand and cause spreads to widen significantly, creating winners and losers based purely on timing. The regulatory implications deserve attention too. When corporations can borrow money more cheaply than the federal government, it suggests that credit markets are mispricing risk in ways that could have systemic consequences. Don't be surprised if bank regulators start asking questions about corporate credit concentrations, or if the Treasury Department begins considering whether mega corporate bond deals should face additional scrutiny. From a portfolio construction perspective, this week's events suggest that traditional asset allocation models may be breaking down. The correlation between stock and bond returns has been increasing, meaning that diversification benefits are eroding precisely when investors need them most. If you're building portfolios for clients, you need to consider whether traditional 60-40 stock bond allocations still make sense when both asset classes are being driven by the same underlying factors. Here's the specific intelligence you can act on. Corporate credit spreads are going to widen over the next 12 to 18 months as the supply of new issuance overwhelms demand. That creates opportunities in the secondary market for investors willing to be patient. Rather than chasing new issues at aggressive pricing, wait for existing bonds to cheapen as dealers need to clear inventory. The currency implications are actionable too. Amazon's debt issuance was entirely in dollars, but their revenue exposure is global. If the dollar weakens from current levels, Amazon's debt burden becomes more manageable while their international earnings translate into more dollars. Currency hedging strategies that bet on dollar weakness against the euro and yen could be profitable ways to play Amazon's refinancing risk. For hedge funds and sophisticated investors, the volatility in corporate credit markets creates trading opportunities that haven't existed since the pandemic. The basis between credit default swaps and cash bonds has been unusually wide, creating arbitrage opportunities for investors with the capital and expertise to execute complex trades. Similarly, the credit curve is pricing in scenarios that seem inconsistent with Fed policy expectations, creating opportunities for relative value trades. But here's the bigger strategic picture. Amazon's bond deal represents the peak of a credit cycle that's about to reverse. The combination of rising rates, increased corporate leverage, and compressed risk premiums historically leads to significant credit losses. Rather than chasing yield in corporate bonds, sophisticated investors should be positioning for a market environment where credit selection and risk management become much more important than they've been over the past few years. The real opportunity may be in credit strategies that benefit from market stress rather than trying to avoid it. Distressed debt funds, credit hedge funds, and opportunistic strategies that can invest across the capital structure may generate much better risk-adjusted returns than traditional long-only corporate bond portfolios. Amazon's $50 billion bond deal was brilliant execution by their treasury team and investment bankers. They identified a window of extraordinary demand and extracted maximum value for shareholders. But the success of this deal doesn't make it a template that other companies should follow, and it doesn't make corporate bonds attractive investments at current levels. The week that Amazon raised $50 billion may be remembered as the moment when corporate America's debt binge reached unsustainable levels. The companies that raised money this week will likely outperform those that waited, but the investors who bought their bonds at these prices may not be as fortunate. In summary, Amazon got the deal of the decade. Institutional investors overpaid because they had to, and the broader corporate bond market just set up conditions for significant losses over the next few years. The companies that accessed capital this week are winners. The investors who provided that capital are taking risks they don't fully understand. Here's my prediction. Within 18 months, we'll see the first major corporate bond default from a previously investment-grade issuer. Spreads will widen by at least 100 basis points across the credit spectrum. And Amazon's bonds will be trading significantly below par despite the company's strong fundamentals. That's Edge Capital Insights for today. I'm Sloan. Stay sharp, stay skeptical. And we'll be back next week with a deep dive into why private equity's latest fundraising numbers suggest the leveraged buyout boom is about to come to a very messy end.